No. I think it came down to, say, about $18 or something like that, if it was distributed. You know, you can spend $18 in no time. Big example of land claims that was used or really showed what could happen if all the money was given is the land claims that was made for the Klamath Falls Indians. The money was given to them. Everybody got their money. And it was a big joke. I was living here in Seattle. It was in the papers. There was one man sitting on the curb. He was drunk. He had a brown paper sack full of money. All his money.
That's why I'm saying.
And that's what happened to his money.
That's why I'm saying you cannot do everything.
They were taken advantage of. Some of them were taken advantage of by other people.
Yeah.
But a few of them went out and bought farm equipment and went and fixed up their land and improved their lives. And this happened over and over and over again through practically every land claims that was settled in the United States. And so this was why they thought they could protect the money we were getting by forming 12 regions in Alaska. And the only way they could do it as fairly as they could was to distribute some to the villages and leave some in the corporations so that they could operate. They couldn't give each individual person in the village their money because there wasn't enough of it. And so that by providing enough money for businesses or like this cooperative I talked about, or improvements like they had housing, the man mm-hmm. was talking about the housing in Heidelberg, that the benefits would come to them. And it's an impossibility to distribute money to people. You know, we're scattered all over the United States, and some of our people are living out of the country. I ran the Clinton and Hyde office for a little while. I was getting letters from every place that you could imagine. And to distribute money to people living as scattered as we are, today you can see because of the fact that we're scattered all over, there isn't enough of a representation here. And we made every effort we could to distribute information about this hearing. The problem with our people is they don't realize that the issues that are going to be presented here today is a very important factor in what they have in 1991.
That's right. Anyway, I just wanted to tell you, I liked your speech up there and your information you have. Well, but we have to find a way for 1991.
We sure do.
How we're going to support our American, Alaskan people to make them live and give their heritage to the ones below us. And we just got to protect them somehow to make it stay that way.
Well, I hope we do. The main thing is that I hope we have enough left to pass on to the children that are going to follow us, whatever there is left.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, thank you both.
Can I question you? I mean, not question you, but I really feel.
Please sit down, Mrs.
You mentioned something about the government.
Yeah.
And I think the government is taking control of us, and it's time we start getting control of ourselves. I really feel that they are more interested in the land. They don't care what the individuals want or need, as long as they give out what they got. They're satisfied. And it's possibly causing a lot of stress amongst the shareholders. thinking maybe we aren't getting our share. But eventually we'll wind up getting it if we work it right. A lot of that can be restricted, which is okay too, but like I said, they're more interested in land than they are individuals. And they don't care if it's restricted. That's okay too. And as far as the Federal Bank Reserve, well, they'll keep investing and they'll be on control. And I'm not pointing out at anyone, I'm just speaking for what I feel, what I know of and what I can sense and feel of what's going on. I really think that, you know, for example, the government can go and slip, you know, take a house right from under a person's feet. And that's the same way with this Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Like I said earlier, it can be a losing part, a losing of money, and losing of land, and losing of this. I hate to say it this way,
but maybe,
I really doubt that it's going to happen that way for shareholders that know what they're doing. I'm really speaking for shareholders.
Go ahead.
Well, actually, let's say we created our own problem. The land was bought from the Russians by the United States. Technically, mm-hmm. It was their land. But prior to that, we owned it. The Aborigines, the natives that lived there owned it. However, they had no form of government to state their claims or show their claims. And so when we brought the claims, if we were living in another country, it would never have been granted to us or given back to us. All right, so we got it back and we got paid for it and we got certain benefits given to us, but we didn't do our part. It wasn't developed, and it is not being run the way the government thought we would handle it. The government, to my way of thinking, has done a lot for the natives. I went to an Indian school in Oregon, and it's the surprising part of it was run by a Army Captain, he was part Indian, and we marched to our meals, we marched to school, we went to school half a day, we worked half a day, and we learned different trades and different occupations. I wasn't very crazy about it, I didn't particularly like it, however, the thing stayed with me. You earn your way in life, and you get exactly what you put into it. And there have been schools provided for Alaska Natives and Indians from the lower 48. Mm-hmm. Some have taken advantage of it, and some haven't. And surprisingly, when I got involved in the Indian community again, the leaders I met from all over the United States were Indians that had gone to school in Chamawa. They evidently learned to pay for their way. We have students that come down here, and if it isn't exactly what they want to study, they drop out. The money's wasted. The educational benefits that they receive are not available to somebody else to pick up. I think the government has provided us with enough benefits if we had just taken advantage of it. I didn't have the government pay for my education. I worked in a home down here to get my education. You wouldn't do it. I scrubbed floors, I made beds, I washed clothes, I took care of children, but I got my education on my own. It wasn't given to me by the federal government or by anyone else. And this is probably the problem too. There have been too many handouts that have been not taken advantage of.
I wasn't speaking so much of education at this time. I'm speaking of federal government. Evidently, is taking control of land and the Settlement Act.
Well, maybe
they have to. They have to control the land, otherwise.
But I was thinking maybe we'd have some kind of input. I mean, you know, this has just started that I know of. I didn't know of this until I got a letter in the mail last week. But I think we need a longer time than this year, because 1991 is coming close, yes, but it's there's more years to, because I am unsure of what I want to do with my stock or my land at this time. And I feel that I have nothing against the government. It's just the idea of how the government is operating with us. And I find that we can be fair or have been fair. And I feel that they do not listen to the ones that are positive, but they're coming down with the ones that are negative. And putting us out in the paper and making us look like we're not getting anywhere, but stagnant.
Well, all I can say is, as I stated in my paper, it was given to us for 20 years to do something with it. And at right here, at this point, it looks like we haven't done it all completely. There's remaining 6 years. Whether we can do it within that length of time is going to be left up to the leaders we choose. And I think that's all you can say about it, and whether the leaders we choose are going to be responsive enough to respond to the problems is something that no one has any control over except you people. If you will voice and let your board of directors know what you want, that's the only thing you can do.
Well, I'm sorry I hadn't been working with mine through the years, but I feel what's important is today and on. That's about all I got to say. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you both. Maybe I could just say something in connection with the question that the last two speakers put to Mrs. Tillman. That is, what about the land that Alaska Natives have that's a corporate asset in Alaska? How can it be protected for future generations? I think that's what the last two speakers were concerned about. Well, there's two ideas that have been put forward at the meetings we've held in Alaska. The first is, well, let's ask that Congress restrict the sale of shares. That is, if Native people can't sell their shares to non-Natives, then those corporations will continue as Native corporations, and the land will continue as Native land. And of course, there are a lot of people that still use that land in Alaska for hunting and fishing and trapping and subsistence, and they would be able to continue to use it in that way. The other line of thought, and a lot of people in the villages in Alaska have raised this idea, and Mr. Paul this morning supported it, they say, look, maybe this land isn't going to be safe if it's a corporate asset, because the corporations can go broke or other things. They can go broke even if nobody can take them over. If they go broke, then the land can be seized by the creditors. So those folks say, well, let's transfer the land to our IRA governments, traditional councils, tribal governments, and it'll be safe there. And those are the two lines of thinking that people have had about, in answer to the question, well, how do we keep this land as native land for future generations? So I just mentioned that. Now, you do appreciate that that if you do, as some of you have urged, restrict the sale of shares so that after 1991 people can't sell their shares, then they won't be able to sell their shares and they won't get any money for them. I mean, that's, they have the prospect of dividends in the future, but they can't just walk into a brokerage house in Seattle in 1992 and say, I want to sell these shares. How much are they worth? Those are some of the things that kind of complicate this business, but there it is. Pardon? Well, as the law stands right now, if the law isn't changed, you could take your shares on January 1st, 1992. You could take your shares and you could walk into a brokerage house in Seattle and say, I want to sell these shares. How much will you give me for them? Or you could go into a bank and say, I want to borrow some money, and here are these shares as collateral. How big a loan will you give me? Now, what I'm saying is that in Alaska, and even here today, Native people have said, well, if we sell our shares or put them out of our possession into the control of others, then those other people owning the shares will own the corporation and they will own the land that is our heritage and that we want to pass on to future generations. So you have that dilemma. If you sell or collateralize the shares, it means native land might cease to be native land. If you hang on to the shares, the land stays in native hands, but folks actually are unlikely to get any, you know, big cash payment out of the settlement, because Congress had the idea that after 20 years you could sell your shares and get a big cash payment. I know this is complicated, but I didn't write the thing. That's the way they set it up. And I've spent a year trying to explain it. And those are some of the problems. I think we could hear from one or two more folks, if you like, before lunch. Mr. Peel?
I had another thing to add on to that. I've been thinking about it.
Do you want to go to that mic there? Or?
Coming from Heidelberg again, I've been thinking about this. I went outside and thought about it, and I talked to the board of directors, and I've been trying to call them using the telephone and tell them I'd use the media, the news media. And we had an incident a while back. We have a guy working, our president stepped down from the corporation, and they replaced him. He's not acting as a president, but he's in charge of our financial status right now. He worked for our village before, and he has say that he dug in the piggy bank and he took out money or whatever that did not belong to him. He was working for the village at the time. Now he's in charge of our financial problems, and I asked the board of directors, what is he doing in our corporation? And the answer that I got is that that's the best that they can do. I personally talked to the guy, and I asked him last spring. I go up there every year, and I get involved in it, and I asked him, how did they get you in here? And he started rushing towards me a little bit, and he thought about it real quick. I wanted him to do something. It brought shame to our people, and I don't like it. He's sitting in there. He gets paid good money, and if our people could put somebody in that rips our own people off, I have the feeling that they're using him as cover. And I told them, in the recent days, a few days ago, yesterday, I said, I want you guys to get rid of him. I want you guys to get him out of there. He's bringing shame to our people. I asked them personally, I said, what are you guys using him for? Are you guys using him to, as a blanket to cover up all the wrongdoing that they're doing? And all I get in reply is that he's the best for the job. And I tell you what I see. Every day that I see people do something, I respect the older people because they have experience and knowledge. No matter if they go to school or not, they learn from hard knocks, from digging clams to treating people with honor and trust. And the guy that put in the financial part of our corporation, my heart cries because we have qualified people in our own village, older people such as my father. His name is Sylvester Peel. And he's competent to lead our people, but it's still divided because of, there's this guy, I'm not naming names now because it's true. It's scary as hell. He's sitting there and he looks at us like they own the village. When I go in, I'm an outsider and I don't like the feeling. And here he is, he gets paid $40,000 to $60,000 a year and he's sitting there smiling. They're the only ones getting money and what are we? You know, I'm struggling. I'm proud to know that I have a family, and we could make it on our own without the corporation. I just don't like to see people in there that will rip our own people off. If they do it once, they'll do it again. And that's my true feeling, and I know this is being written down, and I want those people back home to hear about it. They say, we're trying to do something. I don't want them to try to do something. I want it done because it's scary. I'm sweating. I want those people. I feel like I jeopardize myself when I speak up because I fight many, many people, and that's my own people because of this. And I feel like now I went outside and thinking, should I speak about this? Because I want them to know that I will stand alone or I'll stand with our people and I will speak for them, but I don't want people like that in our corporation because we can make and live without it. I have an incident rate happened 2 years ago. Unemployed, I don't want to go to the welfare. I went up there each season. I picked fish eggs for selling, and it's illegal for us. We have no rights, it's illegal. We have no protections. I can't hire an attorney. Our own corporation wouldn't help us. And it's involving quite a bit. I make means. I'm a robber from our own land. I went out to try to help support my family. We like to live good. I learned the ways of the city, of what you'd call the white people. And I'm stuck down here in a lot of ways because I'm an outsider. But I go back home and I pick fish eggs and I sneak them on the plane, I sneak them on the boat, I sneak them any way I can to survive. That's our way of life. We never stole from our land before. Now I look at it, I'm 34 years old and here we are, we're looked at like we're stealing from our own land, man. There's something definitely wrong. I feel like, why don't they just take us off on some high mountain and shove us all off and save us the embarrassment that they're bringing to our tribe? It's got to end.
Don't you have friends and people that you know that you can put a petition out or something?
It just, you see it in everyday life how we're divided. And I have friends, and I'll tell you one thing that I see. And it takes very much capital and money to get attorneys. You get a...
You don't need attorney for a petition.
Well, you know, one thing to do now, right now, in this day and age, after the corporation's been started and has tried to get the young people or the older people involved, because already too much money has been spent and too much has been put behind us already. Even I hear that my family is involved in a lot of things. They say the boat owners and such, and be quiet. They tell me that. I've heard it from some of the best, and they've got paid a lot of money. Sure, I have friends. I have attorney friends. I have friends from all over.
Excuse me, Mr. Peel. We have somebody else who'd like to say a word.
Okay.
And we'll be here all day today and tonight and tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. No mafia. That's unheard of. I don't do that.
And I think that I should say that questions relating to alleged individual wrongdoing are questions that we can't sort out here. They're for the courts, and allegations that people have been engaged in wrongdoing are not ones that I can consider, and I think that should be understood. I know people feel strongly about these things, but that's not our task. Well, ma'am, you are next.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berger. I'm Marilyn Heights. My address is 14056 Southeast 8th, Bellevue, Washington. I'm up here speaking because I come here from a very roundabout way. People are talking about this stealing their culture. My mother's culture was stolen from her in 1893 by a white court, which took her from her mother. And it was kind of strange because they didn't even give her to a family. They gave her to a bachelor who was a saloon keeper and was my grandmother's employer. And my mother left Alaska in 1896 and never returned. She passed as white because she was very light-complected. She didn't look white, but she passed as white. She was very proud of the fact she was an Indian, but don't ask her if she was one. And I think many of you know what I'm talking about. I mean, you know in your heart you're better than everybody else because you're an Indian. But don't anybody ask me that because I know you're going to shaft me. That's why you want to know. And that was my mother. Anyway, I was born in Miami, Florida. I have never lived in Alaska. I have visited many times. My mother, as I said, never returned. I grew up in New York City, and I should have grown up there. And by some strange quirk of nature, I'm here. And I don't know why. I've always thought it was predestination, because I get involved in Indian things, and then I say, to heck with it, I'll quit. But I better get on to things at heart, because I am one of those people who was raised by a German father who didn't believe in money. And I know there's been the talk about how much money we got out of Alaska and how it was given to the native people. But it was very strange. We were given almost $1 billion, and before the papers were finally signed, Nixon devalued the dollar so it was automatically worth less. And if you look at money, even on the dollar bill you got in your pocket, it says this is fake money. Money does not exist. And this is where we were shafted, because we were given something for something very substantial. And I am going to have to take issue with a very dear friend of mine, Margaret Tillman. We did not have our land sold to the United States by the Russians. The Russians never claimed to own Alaska. In fact, it did not come to light until after everything was settled that the actual treaty, which transferred the political entity of what the Russians controlled in Alaska to the United States government, said, you recognize the native people in the ownership of their land. That's right in there. And anybody who has read the Tundra Times knows this better than I do. So I apologize, Margaret, but I am not pro-white, I'm pro-Indian. I don't think the white man ever did anything right, and I've studied a lot of history. And that's why I said, a thing that I'm going to say next is, by what human right or any right does any government have to remove one group of people from the land to benefit another group of people that they prefer, which is what we're being done to. We are being pushed aside so that the white people can put in what they want to make something I, again, already said doesn't exist, money. So the most horrible things in the world are being done because of gold and money, and neither one of them are valuable. Gold is only good for what our ancestors did. Well, I like to wear it. That's all it's good for. And then if the government wanted us to succeed as a group of people, why did they insist that we had to have a corporation handle our property and our money? We have absolutely no way of controlling that corporation. 100 shares? I mean, what are you? You're just like waving a stamp at them, isn't it? They don't care. They control the amount of names. I mean, several people in the Seattle area have wished to change the, and get someone from down here so that we can see Alaska, so that we could have some ability to tell them what we wanted. We don't even know who the Sea Alaska shareholders are. And it costs a great deal of money to go to Alaska, find out their names, and then we have to pay them, too, something like $400, plus the postage, unless you want to go door to door, and that's even more expensive. So how can we get together with another 100 shares? It takes something like 700,000 shares just to elect one board member. Now, do you know that many people? I don't. I mean, even, I mean, I get around, I meet a lot of people, I know lots of nice people, but and there's no way I'm ever going to meet 700,000 shares of Sea Alaska stuff. They got the mailing list, they send it out. There's a whole bunch of guys down on First Avenue, it says you'll get a free trip to Hawaii if you send this in soon. They say, sure, I can be, at least if I'm in Hawaii, I'm not cold when it's wintertime. So they send their shares up. They don't care, don't have to pay for the stamp. When they settled the land question in Alaska, as I said, they left out the part that we really did own the land, and they told us that they'd paid Russia for all this. I knew a lady who was recently died, maybe some of her relatives are here, Susie Gubatayo, and she told me herself that her relatives were there when the fort was transferred from the Russians to the Americans. And the Russians told the people right then and there that the only thing they had sold to the American government, the U.S. government, was that fort and the one at Wrangell, and I don't know, there were some other ones, but that's all that they sold for the $7 million. Anyway, who was it, the people who have benefited the most from the settlement of the land question? Really, the first people that got the most was the oil companies, because suddenly they could drill all the oil they wanted to. Nobody was going to question then the fact that the land didn't belong to who, you know, the question who the land belonged to was now settled. The Minnesota land was there. The second was the state of Alaska, because the state of Alaska was going crazy because it didn't have any land to tax or to build anything on. They had ways of getting around that. That's why the town of Klukwan didn't get their town, because the University of Alaska had already claimed it. And I've never figured that one out, because they said they couldn't patent any land before the land settlement, but the University of Alaska did it. Now you explain that one to me. The white businessmen. See, Alaska's made a lot of white businessmen rich. Calista have built a big hotel and made a lot of white businessmen. They now have a very good corporation, but in the beginning, the bankers and everybody else zeroed in and just had a lot of fun with the money the different corporations had. There has been a comment made about why didn't they give more money to the village corporations. Well, some of those village corporations only got something like $35,000, $40,000. They only got a percent of the amount of money that their people would have received. And it was very small. And what can you do with $35,000 in a year? I mean, there's not a business in Seattle that you can start. How about one in Alaska, where there isn't much but fish or lumber? And you set up a lumber company, that's expensive, or a fish cannery. Some of them borrowed money on their timber, and that way they got started. But in the beginning, there was no money given to any village that could start any corporation. And some of the Eskimo corporations, there were so few people in the corporations that they didn't have any, very much money to use to start a corporation. I mean, when you think of starting a corporation, it costs millions and millions of dollars. Look at just to sell soap, how much money they spend on advertising. I think I've about said everything I can say, because if I don't stop now, I'll probably go on all day. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, please.
Mr. Berger, my name is Lucille Oliver. Mm-hmm. and I'm from, born and raised in Ketchikan, Alaska. My address is 10101 Dayton Avenue North, Seattle, Washington, 98133. I believe shareholders who own shares in the corporations should have a say in how the corporation is run instead of all power being vested in the board of directors. I know of a particular case where a person who owns shares in Sea Alaska Corporation submitted two resolutions to the board of directors for ratification by shareholders at their annual meeting. This person complied with the SEC rules and regulations, Alaska statutes, and bylaws of Sea Alaska Corporation, Article 3, as amended March 1981. Resolution number one was to propose the change in the composition of the nominating committee of Sea Alaska directors from six incumbent directors to a nominating committee comprised of three directors and three elected shareholders selected from three age groups. This plan was to hopefully give shareholders more involvement with the nomination of directors. Resolution number two was that directors and executive officers of Sea Alaska be prohibited from serving as officers and directors of village corporations. Since shareholders of village corporations receive special benefits not received by all Sea Alaska shareholders, this resolution hopefully would eliminate conflict of interest arising from business situations in which the village corporations and Sea Alaska are competing in the same markets. Sea Alaska disallowed the resolutions. It seems that shareholders should have received information for investors in NANSCA, from the state of Alaska, such as information that is available for investors from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. And for instance, now you can get these pamphlets from the SEC, and it's information for investors, and one is titled Election of Directors and the Proxy Rules, Shareholder Rights, Shareholder Proposals, and Shareholder Rights to Vote, which would have been very helpful. And then I have something else. This is the second part. Public Law 93638, Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act, January 4, 1975, and it states, to provide maximum Indian participation in the government and education of the Indian people, to provide for the full participation of Indian tribes in programs and services conducted by the federal government for Indians, and to encourage the development of human resources of the Indian people, to establish a program of assistance to upgrade Indian education to support the right of Indian citizens to control their own educational activities and for their other purposes, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that this act may be cited as the Indian Self-Determination and Education Act, and this congressional finding, Section 2. The Congress, after careful review of the federal government's historical and special legal relationship with and resulting responsibilities to American Indian people, finds that, number one, the prolonged federal domination of Indian service programs has served to retard rather than enhance the progress of Indian people and their communities by depriving Indians of the full opportunity to develop leadership skills crucial to the realization of self-government, and has denied to the Indian people an effective voice in the planning and implementation of programs for the benefit of Indians, which are responsive to the true needs of Indian communities. And number two, the Indian people will never surrender their desire to control their relationship both among themselves and with non-Indian governments, organizations, and persons. And the Congress further finds that true self-determination in any society of people is dependent upon an educational process which will ensure the development of qualified people to fulfill meaningful leadership roles. And the public The corporate structure was not the way to go in implementing the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, December 18, 1971. Public Law 93638, Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act, dated January 4, 1975, came 3 years after the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act of December 1971. How could Congress expect the corporate form of organization to be the best way to distribute Alaska Native land claims benefits to Alaska Natives when corporate managers had little or no training? Most of the managers had on-the-job training. I feel management has too much power and shareholders not enough input. In Alaska villages and towns, many Natives are related or longtime friends. Since each of the 12 regions includes certain geographical areas, it is presumed that in voting for candidates to the board of directors, that they will vote for relatives or friends, whether or not they are qualified for the job by education or business expertise. Once these directors get on the board, the proxy solicitation system of paying shareholders to collect proxies is rather questionable. When these friends and relatives get seated on the board of directors, they are voted back in year after year, whether the corporation is profitable or not. I must add, some Native corporations have good management and are making 7i disbursements. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, ma'am. I wonder if you wouldn't mind if we took a break for lunch now, and we'll come back at 1:45. May I just say, before we break for lunch, that I am grateful to all of you who came, and especially those who spoke this morning. It's been a good discussion, and I've learned a lot. If we come back at 1:45 and you want to get on early, there's a particular time that you want to speak, mention that to Mary Kenswick, who's sitting over here at the controls, or to Joyce Johnson, who also works with us. Would you stand, Joyce, so folks will know who you are? Speak to Joyce or Mary, if you don't mind, so that they could let me know that you'd like to go early on this afternoon. And I think it'd be a good idea to stop for lunch, and we'll come back at 1:45 and carry on this afternoon.
My name is George Campbell. I'm from New York. Some of the information given in that speech.
Well, there was a young man.